T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hello and welcome to Better Living, a show about the people and organizations that make an impact in our area. I'm your host, Nick Carissimi. Today we are talking about Texas Hunters for Heroes. I have two representatives in the studio with me. Up first is Tim Weiland. He's the DFW chapter president, he's the national secretary of this organization, and he's also a co-founder. Sir, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Nick. Good to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
Well, thank you very much. All right, so talking off mic, and I found out that this is the first time you guys are doing any media.
Pretty much. Yes, sir. Haven't done it at all.
Now, is that on purpose?
A little bit, yes. We're not... I just get to the point. We're not the puppy dog folks. We started this organization, myself and one other, sitting around a campfire, and Sterling and I were discussing why they had certain organizations taking vets out and how they were supporting them. And they were taking a lot of members out of Brooks Army Medical Center in San Antonio, taking them on exotic hunts, telling them where to shoot, and say, there's your kill, take it home. A lot of these young kids didn't have the money or the ability to process and get the mount mounted.
Especially exotics.
Exotics, exactly, because they're expensive.
For those that don't know, this is not a cheap hobby, let's say.
It can be expensive, you betcha.
Yeah.
But we decided that, sitting around a fire, that we would take and process the meat. We could do that. We could find enough money that we could process the meat, and then we could mount the trophy, find a taxidermist who would be willing to assist us on a worthy cause, and Sterling and I decided that would be the way to go. We wound up raising a lot of money the first year, $10,000. A lot of money. Wow. You know, $10,000, you think. There's organizations out there that $10,000 they spend a day, and we're not that. But what we do is we keep it low profile. To get back to your original question, why do we do what we do, and why don't we have any marketing? Our marketing is word of mouth. We want the folks to come out to our hunt, not because we're a named guy, say, hey, look at my guy. He's beat up. He went to war for you. No, we want our warriors to come out to us, have a good time, get back into the field, get back into camaraderie, and enjoy going hunting with each other. Stuff we used to do before we got hurt. And just say, hey, cool, we're having a grand time. And then you go home and tell somebody else about it. Hey, call Tim. We need to go hunting. And it's exactly how it's happened. And the word of mouth has spread from one chapter, down in San Saba to seven chapters now, 7.5 years later, one in Arkansas and one in Louisiana, 4 in the state of Texas.
I do want to talk about, well, you brought up a lot to talk about. Basically, you've covered the entire next 25 minutes that we're going to discuss. But let's start a little bit with your background, all right? Are you a professional hunter?
No. I hunt. Professional hunter, that's an interesting... Wow, that's an oxymoron. What is a professional hunter? I can't be a professional hunter because I got a beautiful wife at home. And
uh-huh. All right.
Anyway, now there's a lot of professional hunters with wonderful wives, I'm sure, but you got to be out there bright and early in the morning, and you got to stay way late, skinning and dirty all the time. And we do a lot of that. Go all over, and there's a lot other gentlemen out there and ladies who know a lot more about hunting than we do, but our organization covers most of the Texas-type hunting. We haven't gotten an alligator. One of these days we'd like to try it, but that'd be cool.
There's always something on the list.
Yeah, always something on the list. But
when did you start hunting? Has this been a lifelong pursuit for you?
Yes.
All right.
It's ever since I was a kid.
Avid hunter, and you are also a member of the military. You are a Marine, correct?
I am a Marine. You
All
betcha.
Right. And how long were you in?
I was in for 22 years, retired in 05, and I was a flight engineer on KC-130s and loved that job. Best job I ever had.
All right. So what's day-to-day like that? What are you doing?
Flight engineer, KC-130s. How do I explain this? His job is kind of like being a flying professional bum. That's not right. That's not
I was
going to
say, I was like, that's not exactly what I expected there.
It is the best job I've ever had. You get a crew in my day. Of course, we've got the new J model at Lockheed's building, and they've cut the crew down a little bit. Flight engineer now is replaced by a bunch of computers. Not as good looking as I am, but that's okay. At any rate, had a crew of seven. We'd fly all over the world, do all kinds of missions. You name it, we probably did it. Hauling cargo, passengers, refueling in flight, and fixing the airplane when we're on the road, taking care of squadron operations when we're at home. And it was just, it was just a great job. How do you, it's a job that a person loves. You don't get those, but maybe once in your life if you're lucky. And I truly enjoyed it.
I know C-130s, but what's the difference between a C-130 and a KC-130?
K is the ability to refuel, and the Marines have that.
Okay.
And Air Force has a couple, but not many.
Did you stick with one plane, or did you have multiple that you used?
I had the Fs, Rs, and Ts, the models, all C-130s. So the answer to your question is yes, but older ones, Fs, Rs, in the middle, and Ts. When I retired, the J models were finally coming on board, and again, a good platform.
But, did you work on planes outside of the military ever?
Oh, I did, yes.
Okay.
I had, I've got my A&P and my IA, so I did a lot of modifications to aircraft around the world. Night vision type operations, be able to modify the cockpit so that you could fly in a nighttime environment with all the lights out, and that was fun. Went all over doing that, and then did a little bit of engineering on aircraft, worked on a Qatari Sheikh's 747-800, and put $100 million worth of new product into that, and I was rolling, I was, yeah.
What was the name of that plane?
It was a Boeing product, 747-800.
Did it have like a name, like a nickname?
Oh, it was too new. I'm sure he named it, but had solid gold fixtures and a bunch of other stuff.
I was going to joke about, like how much gold was in this airplane, but for really?
Yes. It had the first time in my life I'd ever put a bidet in an airplane or even heard of having a bidet.
Was it a gold bidet?
No. But it was pretty interesting.
You get out of the Marine Corps after a really long career.
22 years.
How long did it take you before you started missing it? Because I think that would be one of the reasons why you would want to start a group like Texas Hunters for Heroes. It's got to be kind of one of the main drivers, because what I find is when guys start organizations like this, there's a part of them that needs this organization as much as they want to give it to other people.
Wow. You're going to talk to Patrick here in a little bit, and I'm sure he'll tell you the exactly same thing. Patrick was in for 4 years. I was in for 22. I was a senior enlisted Marine. I was a gunnery sergeant. And when you get that many years in the Marine Corps, your family includes your biological and everybody in your Marine Corps. We're a tight bunch of people, and we take care of our own. You've heard that before. It's not just an expression that Hollywood or some media promoter came up with. Yeah, we're a big family. We are. And so to answer your question, how soon did I start missing them? Probably the minute I walked out the door. It's a different world. It's very, until you experience it, it's, oh, wow. I don't know of anything else that even come close to it. You so rely on the next person, man or woman next to you. And you so know so much about that person, his ins and outs and everything, that you can just say, yeah, if I need it, he's there. I don't have to even say words. Patrick can respond back to me and tell me what I'm thinking. We're that kind of close. And out in the civilian world, everybody makes their jobs and their livings and goes home to their families. And very few organizations get that tight. Maybe because they don't have to rely on each other so much as what we do. But, yeah, you miss it right away to answer that question.
What year did you say you got out?
I got out in 2005, in August 2005. I had just finished my third deployment overseas and had an opportunity to go to work for Lockheed, so I took it.
Where were you deployed at?
I did Afghanistan one tour, and then two tours in Iraq.
Okay. So. All right, so you were out for a good 6-7 years before this organization materialized.
Correct.
Did you have the feeling that you wanted to do something in that space of time? Did you know kind of deep down that you were going to start some kind of group, or you wanted to be a part of a group, or did that not even occur to you?
Probably the last. Didn't occur to me. When we were sitting around the campfire that one night, it just like, bam, magic.
Yeah.
And it was one of those lightning bolts. We need to do this. And I found out in the last 7 years that to build an organization, there's a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of work. It's volunteer. Nobody gets paid for this. So because of that, you've got to work twice as hard, planning and organizing and hoping folks will get there on time and on target. The amount of work that you got to put into it is worth it, though. And I'll tell you why. When you get to be back with the fellas and you get to do the things we used to do, and you're doing something more because your buddy, your guy, your fella, that Marine, that Army, the Navy, Air Force, we've had Coast Guards and Merchant Marines. They're there for a reason. They want to find out if they can still do what it is. Had a lot of handicaps. We took blinded gentleman hunting and did excellent. Got him an elk. And he never thought he'd do it again. He'd all been right. Hunting all his life.
We need to talk about the programs and the group and all that stuff, but we're going to derail that for a second and talk about a blind hunt. All right. So how did you guys figure out how to do this?
Basically, it's technology. It's the ability to use optic sights and relay a Bluetooth to a telephone. And you've got a spotter sitting next to the shooter. And Scotty Smiley's a major from the Army. And, neat story about Smiley. He was wounded in Iraq, lost his sight, and still served 10 years afterwards at the West Point as an instructor.
Wow.
He was that good. He's that good. And beautiful wife, nice family. But never thought he'd get to go hunting again. Hunted all his life and lost the opportunity. So we put the spotter next to him, and you tap left or right, up and down, and you set the codes up before. And spotter's looking at the cell phone. The shooter's looking through the scope, got the rifle held up because he had years of practice anyway, and lined it up, took the shot, perfect, perfect shot. The
DRT?
Oh, yeah. Boom, done, down. Perfect. You know?
So the cell phone was hooked up to the scope?
Correct. Bluetooth.
Wow.
Technology.
First shot?
First shot.
Explain what happened after. Were you there when that happened?
No, I had just come in that day when the hunt was going on. I had three in a stand, and the president of the organization at the time was with them, and one other. And they lined up the hunt, got it set up. One came in, walked back out. It wasn't a good shot. They let it go. And then the second one came in, crossed the pond. Came up the backside, didn't think it was going to come into where they'd have a decent shot. It was a 110-yard shot. Pretty good for a blind guy. Put it right in the heart. Boom, down. Scotty's face. If you could imagine, be there, okay? In the woods, you hear the wind blowing in the weeds. He goes up and he touches the animal. And, of course, we always pray. We're thanking God for the opportunity to get food. And to be back in the organization that we love, you know, that kind of tribal hunter experience. And he put his hand on his elk, and his face just like a big sunshine. Just boom. This guy, I did it. I did what I never thought I could do because he'd lost his sight. Nah, we put it back on track. And we took him deer hunting after that a couple more times because he got back into hunting again.
That's got to be the perfect example of why you have put so much effort into this group. You know, since 2012, you guys have undergone quite a bit of expansion, especially without, you know, really any marketing or anything like that. It's all been word of mouth. That means that you guys are putting in a lot of work for this. Is that the perfect example of what this organization does for those that are a part of it?
Yeah. I guess the best compliment we got was from our first, one of our first hunts. Had Rick Nessbaum. Brought his son down from Bamsey. Cody had been shot 15 times at point blank range. And didn't think he was going to make it. They put him back together a couple of times. Finally got him home from Germany. He's down at Bamsey, and his life was in the cell phone. He's doing this all the time, playing with the buttons on his cell phone, not talking or communicating to anybody. And I met Cody on a Friday night, and, hey, Cody, how you doing? I'm Tim Weiland. He says, fine. Went back right to his phone. I said, okay, well, this is interesting. What do I do? I said, well, I'm going to just be myself. I'm going to do the stuff I always do. We pushed on him a little bit. Rick had been a Vietnam era recon Marine. And Cody was 10th Mountain Army. And first morning we got him in a stand. Didn't get anything. One had come in close to him, but wasn't a good enough shot to take. And we're really picky. Nobody wounds handles our meals. We take our meals home. Real strict on that. Any rate, so came back into camp and decided to put on an impromptu shooting competition on the range. And so I started needling Cody. So your dad's a recon. He's a Marine like me. He's going to outshoot you, Cody. So we got a rifle set up, and everybody's taking shots downrange. And Rick takes first shot and comes within 3/4 of an inch of the bullseye, center bow, center mass, first shot.
What were you guys shooting with?
It was 480.
Okay.
Weatherby, and at any rate, long-range shooter. At any rate, so we set Cody up. And he was in, like I said, he was in a wheelchair and had legs at work, but he just didn't want to use them. Laid him in the back of the pickup truck. I had a big rubber mat in the back of my truck and laid him down in that, lined up a shot, and he came within a 1/4 inch from the top of the bull, right to the center mass. And so that was it. You know, now he starts ribbing dad. So the rest of the guys are ribbing dad, and he starts to open up a little bit. And that night we took him out. He got a nice 8-pointer. And nice 8-pointer for Texas. You know, I mean, we don't have trophy bucks down here. Like you see, unless you go to an exotic, you know, your standard run-of-the-mill Texas are good deer, but you can't eat the horns. It's the meat we're after. At any rate, got a nice buck, and wow, Cody did not stop talking. I mean, it bah, 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 and it just everything. Talked about his experiences in the Army and everything, and he was back. And what was neat about it is that I got a phone call from Cody's dad. You can hear he's crying, and he says, I got my son back. Thank you. What do you say? That's why we do it. That's why we do it.
We're talking about Texas Hunters for Heroes. In the studio with me right now is the DFW chapter president. He's the national secretary of this organization and a co-founder, Tim Weiland. Who is this for? Who can be a part of these hunts?
We take wounded vets hunting and fishing. We don't do too much fishing. There's a lot of other organizations out there, but we have one every year that we like, and that's coming up in June. We can talk about that later. But what it's for is wounded vets to go out hunting and fishing. And once a military member leaves the warmth of the service, they tend to disappear back in the weeds, especially if they've got injuries. They're less likely to come out of the woods. Not sure why. Maybe years of past experiences back in the late 70s or early 70s, middle 70s, whatever. But they do. And so we dig, and we find. And we try really, really hard to fill all our hunts with wounded veterans. If I can't fill a hunt, my next thing is going to be veterans. And I usually do okay. But at the same time, I'm looking for veterans. I'm looking for first responders. And we've taken some first responders from Dallas and Fort Worth. Mark, young officer who was shot 9 times over in Fort Worth, we took him on. And great guy. Holy smokes, man. Just nicest, walk this earth kind of person. And who is this person who thinks they're going to shoot my police officer buddy 9 times? You just, wow, you just want to, you know, give him a poke in the eye. But something worse than that. But at any rate, we got to be nice. But Mark was a great guy, took a couple out of Dallas. One of the guys was in that incident with the mad shooter that unfortunately took the 5 police officers. So not only we do that, but like I said, we do wounded vets, veterans, and fire and police. We have had a couple of times where we've gotten to take Gold Star kids, and that's a blast. You know, dad or mom are gone. Dad or mom might have been hunters. Dad or mom would have taken them hunting. You know, grandma and grandpa or whoever's taking care of the kids say, could you take my kid hunting? You darn right we could. Everything's guided, though. Organizations often ask us the same question. How do you take your hunts out? And so we'll have a shooter and a guide. And never alone. It's always controlled. We do that for not only safety reasons, but you'll find out that sitting in the blind, the shooter's either going to look for the animal to hunt, and typically you got to be really quiet if you're deer hunting, or they're just going to spill. And it doesn't really matter if they talk all their heads off and they have a great time when they're out there, or if they're out there to shoot. They're doing what they want to do in the woods with the fellas, having a good time. And that's what it's all about.
I want to talk about the size of the groups that go out there, but you mentioned it, so we might as well just talk about it. Were you surprised at what you got out of this organization and these hunting trips? Because I could see this starting as just being, let's get the guys out, let's get them hunting, let's just give have them a good time. But this therapeutic element that this hunt provides, did that part of it surprise you?
Amazingly, it did. I didn't anticipate some of the things that I've gotten myself into. Listen to the news, and you hear it. It's tough to be a vet off active duty, out in the world, finding work, taking care of your family, coming back with maybe issues, or maybe not at all. But somebody to talk to, somebody understands the way you think. You hear about it all the time. There's other organizations out there that do a really good job with suicide prevention. We've actually helped vets get to that side. I've gotten phone calls in the middle of the night, Tim, I need your help. Who do I talk to? Who do I call? And because of the contacts we continually keep making, here, go right here. This is where you got to go. This is what you got to do. MHMR is an example for medical treatment for drug-type related stuff. We've had questions about that. Self-medicating. The VA does their job as best they can, but maybe this individual isn't getting the opportunity to go up there, so he's going to do his his own self-medicating to make him feel better. And I can control it. Yeah, we're tough guys, right? We can control anything, right? Sort of thing. It doesn't always work that way, and hey, I can't control it. I need some help. What do I do? 2 or 3 in the morning, I get a phone call. Hey, I need some help, but I need it now. What do I do? And because, again, those connections, warriors taking care of warriors, you know, all over, just boom, it happens. So, no, we did not anticipate going from just taking a few guys hunting to being what we are today.
You got one hunter, you got a guide, but how many guys do you actually have going out on a hunt?
That's an interesting question, too. We had around the same campfire when we started that weekend. They were taking 100 guys out bird hunting. Walked the line, shooting dove. My gosh, 100 guys. All weapons, right?
Yeah.
Well, typically when we got 100 guys out shooting, we're at a range or stomping through the weeds somewhere, you know. How do you control that kind of firepower? So we decided that we were going to keep our group small. 2 reasons. One, we could control the safety, okay? Guide and a shooter. So I got 10 guys, watch 10 guys. Piece of cake. And the second part about it is that, again, we get back to, if the guy wants to talk, let him talk. Talk all he wants. You want to hunt? You're going to hunt. The guy's going to point to where you need to shoot. You're going to get it done. All the keen senses that the shooter might have had before he got hurt or wounded as a hunter. Come back. You just see it. It just happens. It's like you're in the zone. Just like football, just like baseball. Any other sport, it's the same thing. You get back in that zone and you're part of that brotherhood. You know, we've been doing it since caveman. So
maybe the best thing about hunting is when the hunting is done and you are around that campfire hanging out. So do you guys have any, is there any structure to the hunts? Or any rituals that you guys go through, or is it, let's do the day's hunt, and then we're just going to hang out, and then what happens, happens.
Interesting. Small structure. I don't want to, we don't try to get, the only thing we do is a Warriors Cup. And the Warriors Cup's a cup we pass the campfire, kind of like the communion cup at church, maybe, if you want to call it that. And we'll toast to those who aren't with us, and a toast to the young who's going to take our place, and we toast to each other. And we pass the Warriors Cup, and everybody drinks from the Warriors Cup. As far as what happens that night, wow, you'd be surprised. You'd have to come. You need to come with us. That's what you need to do. Experience for yourself, because it's good. It's good. You know, there's a couple of beers. Folks start telling war stories or talking about their unit or, hey, remember this? Because they were in the same unit together or they were in the same area together. I was in Missoula in 2002, and you remember that? That big hole? And it just rolls. Stories just flow. And sit back. You know, I'll listen. You know, I'll talk for a little bit, and then you'll see me back out. And these guys go to town.
On the hunt, what is your role? What have you taken over? Are you a listener? Are you a talker? What role do you serve out in the field for Texas Hunters for Heroes?
Yes. You nailed it. It depends on the individual. I will tell you that 22 years being around Marines, senior enlisted, you become a troop handler, basically. You got men that you have to take care of that are attached to you. And you listen to them, you know their wives, their children, you know where their good points are, you know where their bad points are. You know when to listen, you know when to talk, and you know when to just let it go and see where it winds up. And does that make me an expert? Absolutely not. There's folks who have degrees far and above me who can do a far better job. But you go out, you just wait, and something's going to click, and he's going to either want to hear what you have to say or she's going to want to hear, because we take ladies too. And it just happens.
We're kind of having to wrap up. So there are a couple of other questions I want to finish with. But real quick, what has this organization done for you? We've talked about how this organization helps veterans. We've talked about why this got started. We talked about how people can be a part of it. We've talked about what you do at this organization and for this organization. But we haven't really talked about what it has done for you as a person, as a veteran. What have you gotten from Texas Hunters for Heroes?
I miss my family. I miss my Corps. It gives me the opportunity to be back. I'm a probably unique fella, but it doesn't matter if you're Marine, you're Marine, you're Marine. My father was a Marine. I was a Marine. My son was a Marine. Is a Marine, I should say. Let me correct that. Somebody's going to be hollering at me, aren't they? Okay, so we're all Marines. At any rate, we were on active duty. Then two of us retired, and one of them got out. But, boy, it gets inbred. And you're part of that organization. And so for me, getting to go back out and being with the gentlemen and the ladies and doing the hunting and fishing and hearing some of the stories and so forth, it does a lot for me. It does a lot for me. There's a lot of guys that, I'll put it this way. The C-130 is a cargo hauler. And sometimes that cargo's in silver boxes. And you have to respect who's in that silver box. I carried a lot of them and picked them up off the ground at the ramps that we left. You know, we had a ceremony, brought them onto the airplane, and did the same ceremony coming off. Flag-covered coffins is what I'm speaking about. And those gentlemen and ladies don't have the opportunity to do what I'm doing. So for me, it's a way of saying, hey, thanks. Thanks, God. You know, thanks for the opportunity.
How do people be a part of this organization? If people know somebody that could use a hunt, if there's veterans out there listening that want to be a part of this, if somebody just wants to help out, how can people be a part of Texas Hunters for Heroes?
Good question. Check us out on the TexasHuntersForHeroes.org. I'm going to give you a phone number, 817-939-6002. Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. We're looking for volunteers. We're looking for folks who want to help fund us. This is not inexpensive to be able to take folks hunting. If you believe in it, give us a holler. more importantly, in the DFW area and surrounding hour and a half, 2 hour area, if you've got some property, then you're interested in allowing us to go and hunt on your property, take veterans there. We do all the legal stuff so everybody's safe and sound. And you as a landowner are protected, but we always leave it cleaner than we came, and you'll have a heck of a good time meeting some of the finest folks that ever walked the earth.
The organization is Texas Hunters for Heroes. Once again, you can find them online at texashuntersforheroes.org or give them a call at 817-939-6002. You can also search for them on Facebook. I've been speaking with Tim Weiland. He is the DFW chapter president, national secretary, and founder of this organization. Sir, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for coming in, and I hope that you'll come back.
You betcha. Let's go hunting.
Yes, sir.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.